Andre, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me back.
Having you back indeed. First episode we had together, I just had a look before, episode 139 about 2 years ago. A lot has happened since then, so I'm looking forward to going over all of this. Many things have changed on your end. Maybe as a brief intro for those who don't know you yet, can you tell us who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so my name's Andre. I'm 29 years old. I'm half Danish, half French. I've been in CrossFit since 2014, so almost coming up on 10 years. I have qualified for the CrossFit Games 2 times individually in 2021, 22, and I've qualified as a team in 2020 and 2023. Last year, with my own CrossFit affiliate that I own named No Shortcuts CrossFit, representing the training program that I have together with my fiance and the whole team in general, No Shortcuts Training, where we provide training programs for pretty much anyone and everyone that does CrossFit. So we have like Full Circle. If you go to an affiliate, we have affiliate programming. If you're a beginner, if you're intermediate, RX, if you want to be at the CrossFit Games, we deliver programming all the way from, yeah, kind of Full Circle. And that's a I think that's about it. I've been active in CrossFit competitions for 9 years, and this summer, after finishing fifth at the CrossFit Games with No Shortcuts CrossFit in the team division, I have decided to announce my retirement and move on to full-time coaching in order to not have one foot kind of on the athlete side and one foot on the coaching side and kind of doing both 90%. And instead have taken the leap into going 100% into coaching so that I can feel that I'm doing all in on one project, because that's just how I am. I've been really good at being 100% focused on being an athlete for a long time, but it's also been tough trying to like deprioritize coaching for that long and having to remind myself every day, like, prioritize yourself. You're an athlete. You have to, like, if you want to do this, you got to do it right. And I think I've just reached a point now where I'm no longer willing to make more choices away from coaching and from my family to pursue the athletic career of, cracking a top 10 individually or higher. And yeah, so I'm very happy with this new life and new decision.
We'll definitely get to all of this and for everything related to your programming, No Shortcuts. We'll put a link in the description. I want to come back to your first games experience as an individual. I just had a look again. The episode 139 that we recorded was just before the first time you went to the games. It was in June of 2021. Talk us through your experience of those first CrossFit games as an individual. How did it go for you? What were the upsides that you experienced there, and what were the lessons that you came out with to improve for the following year?
I think the upside was that I found out that, people are not untouchable, and like the people you've been seeing on Instagram for many years, and I'd competed against many of them in the past. But it's just different when you stand on the starting line together with the best of the best, and you realize that in some events you can hang with them, and that they're not superhuman, and with a bit more work you could probably beat them in certain things. And I think that's just important from a confidence standpoint. It's like, just realize that the guys at the games, they're not unreachable. They're human, and they were once where you were, and you keep working and you keep, having a more steep curve than them, then you'll catch them eventually. And I think from the upside stand of point of view was that was just a big confidence booster. I finished the games and I was just super hungry for more. I was fired up. I almost didn't take any rest afterwards because I didn't really want to. I didn't really need to. And so I think from that point of view, it was a really good experience. I also finished 15th, which I don't know what if it was higher than what I expected. I had expected to go do as good as I could, and the end result would be whatever it would be. So it didn't shock me, and it didn't make me extremely happy either. It was just, all right, this is where we're at. Pretty like emotionless kind of state where you just look at the data, you look at the results. Okay, I placed high in this event, I placed less high in this event. This is to be expected. This was unexpected. This needs more work. How could I progress this better? And as I coached myself for the past 4 years, it's, you know, it's like the coach's brain kind of switch on. That's maybe also why it's a little bit different situation, because it immediately becomes like an analytic kind of position. You put your shoes in, you're like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to progress that. How could I build a 12-week block that peaks me better for the games? What were the things? And with knowing that it's really difficult to make it again for the games. And I think the downside, I guess I wish I'd done better. I think, you know, I always want to do better. And I think 15th is great, but it's not, I mean, if you're a competitor, you want to win. And I think some events I placed low at, or, you know, I got caught off guard by how fast people were going, and I mispaced certain workouts. And for example, there was one workout with where we had to do some GHD sit-ups, like sandbag, burpee over hay bale, and then a yoke carry. And I was just way too conservative in the first round. And then that just put me at such a, not a deficit, but like BKG almost finished in one round. And I, because I had done it so slow, I was just, yeah, I knew I was going to go into 3-4 rounds. And of course, with the fatigue accumulating, and there was only a minute rest or so, and it was pretty far to get back to the GHD. So, and I wasn't very durable as an athlete, much more power athlete. So I should have just hammered the first round and then hoped to just knock it in two and be done with it, because I was not going to get better the further I was getting in. Like, my recoverability was just horrible at that point. But there was no like bad surprises. Like, I handled the heat quite well. And I raced every event like really hard towards the end, and that paid off. I would say that's definitely why I could finish 15th and not like lower on the leaderboard. It's because I always caught up like 3 to 6 people in the last like 10 seconds of the workouts, because people were taking the foot off the pedal towards the end of the race. And I always just murdered myself in that bit. And that was just a great takeaway. And also for the athletes that I work with now, it's like, there's no looking right or left when you get towards the end of the workout. It's just full gas. Like, you don't know how the guys in the other heats did. And there's always possibility to catch one guy, and, you know, you accumulate 1 point there and there and there across 15 events, then, you know, that really, really accumulates to a lot. So there was a lot like of learning points. I wouldn't say there was anything really negative. I felt good. Like, I had a good nutrition plan that worked out super well, so I wouldn't change anything in regards to that. And yeah, so like looking back at it, there was no regrets. It's just a question of just not being fit and strong enough, just still premature, and still lots of things to work on. And but yeah, again, that was also not like a negative thing, because the mindset have always been, you know, the goal is to get as fast as possible, as strong as possible, as fit as possible. So I never really tied that into any, oh, if I hit this weight on the clean, then I'm strong, or if I can run my 5K in this, then I'm fast. Or it was just always just more is what we're looking. There's always a next step. And I think for some people that mindset probably doesn't work, because it's just, everything is just a stepping stone. And it's not that you don't celebrate the stepping stones, but you haven't created. I think we can tend to like create a framework around like, okay, if I can row this pace in this workout, that's good. Or if I can snatch this weight, that's good. But what I found was that I could have been caught up in my numbers from like the past. Oh, if I row 1500 cal an hour in this workout, that's probably pretty good. But, you know, people get fitter and stronger and faster. And if I had set my brain on these things, then I would hold myself back in a lot of things. And so yeah, kind of mixed answer there.
What moment stands out for you in those 2021 games when you think back to that experience?
I think maybe the first event, which was the kayak, the swim paddleboard, swim kayak event. I was like one of the slowest out of the water, which I was really surprised about, because I think I'm a pretty solid swimmer. We were given fins, and the way I have been taught swimming is not a lot of legs, other than just to keep your buoyancy in place So never really been very active in my legs other than just making sure it keeps me leveled in the water so that they don't drag. So I wasn't really good enough to, you know, adapt to that and use them. So I was really getting passed by a lot of people and sandwiched between plenty and people swimming over me. But as soon as I came in, I sent it to the kayak. And just in that transition, it was like 25 meters. I picked up three guys. And then in the kayak, I killed myself from start to finish. And I had gotten like personal training the night before in kayaking by Michel Bassinet's dad. And so I had learned a lot of like really handy tricks on how to keep my arms more straight. And even though the kayaks were like really, like it's like tourist kayaks, so they're really wide. So you can't like use a perfect technique. Not that I have that technique either, but it was definitely a little bit tough with that. But I was just pushing myself to my absolute limits that whole ride. And I was just picking up one by one, and I could see, that's kind of when it hit me. I'm like, whoa, maybe I could do pretty good at this in this competition, because people didn't seem hungry. Maybe I had that like rookie hunger. And I was looking at some of the other guys in the boats, and they were just looking like, oh, whatever, this event doesn't matter. And I was just thinking in my head, like, I'm going to bring this intensity every single event. And, you know, I know every point matters. And I think like that was the best experience, that feeling of like catching people. And I was just getting like more and more motivated and more hungry. And so it was kind of the perfect start, like poor start in the swim. And then getting that, like, hey, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep pushing and keep pushing. And I felt it just gave me a big drive towards the other events. And like me and Natalie, my fiance, we spoke about, it's like, hey, you know, these guys might not be as hungry as we are. Like, let's get it. Let's punish them for it. And of course they are. But this was just a narrative we're building. And I think that's this huge thing as an athlete. Like, and as a coach, the relationship, that's what I'm really keen on right now as a coach. It's like, how can you kind of feed a narrative around the athlete in different scenarios that can help them propel, like be even more motivated to do even better? Because your physical capabilities is like one thing, but to really like use them, you have to have a certain amount of motivation. It's like, if you have to do a 20 minute watt test on the C2 bike, you can be extremely fit, but if you don't have like the drive to really want it, like the psychological aspect is massive, then you're not going to do well on it. Like, and I know it from my past, because I've done a FTP test in the past, and I remember I was just told, this score is from this guy and I bet you can't beat it. And I was just so set up to, I was going to absolutely kill myself to get this score, even if it wasn't like, I hadn't done any 12-week cycle leading up to it. And I remember after I clicked that score, I was like, okay, this is the question of like motivation. So if we can create a narrative that puts me in that state, then I will be able to do a lot of things that I can maybe lift heavier weights than I have thought I could in the past, or maybe I could run faster splits than I could in the past. And like, there's just, this is a really interesting topic. It's the same with like, there was once a 6K run at Strength and Depth, and my coach, he had told me to go get the new Nike Next Percent, because like all of his athletes had it, but I didn't. And at this point, I wasn't sponsored by Nike. So like, I drove to the Nike store in London the night before, got some shoes. They didn't even have them the right size. So I took them a size bigger, and they only had them in like pink, and I hate colors. And it cost like, I don't know, $270. And he just said to me, no matter what, just trust me on this. You can run 10 to 15 seconds faster per kilometers with these shoes on. And because of the relationship with him, I was like, I trust him 100%. If he says that, I will do it. And I ran the fastest I've ever done. And I couldn't believe it. And again, was I physically prepared to do so? Probably not. Or maybe, I mean, there was that extra gear that I had never found before, but because of the motivation that was created by the coach or that trust, then you can just do a new set of things. Yeah. So
What you're saying here is really interesting. It reminds me of when I was started working in physical prep or SNC in rugby. And this pyramid that I fell upon that had four layers of essentially the structure of physical preparation. At the bottom, you had the physical. And then obviously in a team sport, you had the technical, then the tactical. And at the top, you had the psychological. And I remember vividly the definition of the psychological box or layer was the ability to express your full potential in a situation of high stress, high emotional stress. And like you said, it is the differentiator, because you could have all the bottom layers sorted out. You could be the best, quote unquote, in the gym. But then if you can't leverage that and express it fully on the floor, you're always going to fall short. So what you're saying here is essentially finding the strategies to maximize that transfer between what you could do and what you're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's really interesting. Talk to us about the environment with all the athletes that you were in at the games that year. Were you impressionable? Were you surprised by certain things, whether it's behaviors, whether it's strategies, anything that stood out to you kind of behind the scenes at the games that year?
Yeah, for sure. And that was like also, I think, the coolest part probably, like in the warm-up area prior to events, you almost know who's gonna go out and crush it. Like you can already tell. The best athletes, they come only into the warm-up area last minute. Like when there's just right enough time to get ready for that event. When they're not in the warm-up area, they're somewhere else. I always wonder, like, where's Tia? Where's Matt? Where are these guys at? But they're just somewhere else and they're relaxing and headphones on. They're not there. They aren't there when they need to be there and not when they don't need to. And that allows them to, and I mean, this is my perception, that allows them to go into when it's time to warm up, you know, you're there. And because the CrossFit Games is a test of somehow like durability and both psychologically and physiologically, you kind of have to manage the boundaries of when you're going to be there and when you're not going to be there, so that you can be there for real and spend all your energy on what's important, the warm up, the event, and not all the other stuff. You don't walk around chatting to a lot of people. Some athletes, that feeds them. Most other athletes, that drains them, because it's taking energy away. And so just that, you know, seeing those guys come in when the same guys in the same heat are already halfway warmed up. Those guys just walk in like, why are you already on the barbell with 100 kilos on? Like, I haven't even put my knee sleeves on yet. And then they also just bring a certain focus that you can just sense, like there's a certain intimidation factor that comes into that. You know, when an athlete just comes in, headphones on, you don't know where they come from. They've just been away and they come in and they're just dialing. The warm up is just, you know, it's just structured perfectly. A to Z, they know how many minutes that warm up is going to take. They know what they're going to do. The coach is not bouncing up and down with them. It's just steady. It's they have steady people around them that brings this sort of calm, focused, stoic vibe. This is at least my opinion of the people that like crush it. And they're also very deliberate. Like you have Brent Fukowski, it's so detailed, everything he does, even just from the way his back is packed. It's how he does anything is how he does everything, you know, and just comes into play. And I think it's very difficult to have a sloppy warm up and crush an event. You don't have sloppy nutrition plan and crush an event. There will be an outlier that can do so. But then again, if they had a great nutrition plan on top of that, if they're used to being sloppy, they'll probably crush it even more. So I never found that's a good argument that works for some people, because I don't really feel that's arguably, because
it doesn't mean you couldn't do better, right?
No, exactly. It's the same with the training programs. Like it's with anything, it's everybody gets better. It's a question of who gets better faster. It's what, yeah. Well, how does the progression curve looks like? That's why there is hundreds of programs. Because if it was just one program that worked, everybody would do it. But there's a degree of how well they work. And then there's just, you can just sense when a winner is in the room. And when Matt Fraser is in the room, you're not in doubt. You can sense his presence. It's how he carries himself. It's how he executes his warm up. It's how he finishes an event. It's everything like that. So I think, you know, I'm not going to say that the events are won before they even start, but to some extent, like you just know who's going to do well. And there's just a big, again, psychological piece that comes into this. It's very well mixed with the physiological, because it's easy to be psychologically dialed in if you have a dialed in warm-up plan. You can't be like super stoic and focused if you have no clue what you're doing, and vice versa. If you have a great warm-up plan, automatically you become way more dialed in. And so I think that was just a big eye-opener for me. I've always done these things myself. I just can't keep up with the best of the best when it comes to just how fit they are. But I think from like a preparation standpoint, those kind of things, so warm-ups, and I've always also been at a higher level maybe than I was physically, and that's probably because I knew I didn't feel maybe that I was physically very gifted, so I must be really, really good at the other stuff. But the dream is when those two come together, and I think Matt Fraser is a perfect example of when talent meets hard work, meets great preparation, meets a clever person. And it definitely also makes it easier when you have a coach, even though he didn't really have one. But in most other cases, I could definitely feel that that was some one thing I wish I'd had. Like, I had one person that I would just trust 100%, that would just know exactly what I need to do and how to do it, and, you know, timing under control, and to like a level that, but it requires somebody who's been there. I almost find it close to impossible to find somebody who can do that, who hasn't done it. It would require somebody who's been there maybe with many athletes many, 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 many times. So yeah.
It's interesting what you're saying here, the whole environment around, because essentially when you're at the games, you're there to execute, right? You're not there to rethink your life or how you're going to train for this or train for that. You're just there to execute and put everything that you have on the line and see how far it gets you. And like you said, that switch between, I guess, switching on and off between events. I don't know how much you saw that. And maybe for yourself, how good were you at that point at, you know, being switched on for the event, but then switching off and thinking of something else and going and resting? Is that something that you were able to improve on after that experience?
Yeah, I would definitely say, like, at the 222 semifinals, this time I was really, I think, at my best at doing so. And I think I was also maybe forced a little bit into that position because I really bombed the first event. And I was just really good at finishing that event, doing my cool down. And, you know, I don't think there'd been any other guy across different semifinals that finished that low in the event and then qualified for the CrossFit Games. But I was just like, okay, do like you have planned, you know, really just now we switch off, we do the cool down, we switch off, we go upstairs, we just call Natalie, she was pregnant, she wasn't there with me. We just breathe, like, debriefed the event just for 2 minutes. I said, all right, it's done. And we hung up and just did my recovery modalities, listened to music, had a power nap, showed up to the next event like nothing had happened. And I was able to just show up like it was a completely different day. And I felt, after I'd done that, after the first event, I kept doing it after every event. So by the time I arrived for the final day, and the funny thing is that the like chill out area was amazing in England at the Strength and Depth that year, but there was nobody. It was huge. And I swear there was maybe 10 people there, and all the teams also had access. And I was standing upstairs and looking down from because you could see the arena and the vendor village. Mm-hmm. And I saw so many of my competitors like walking around vendor village and like being downstairs, and it was super noisy because there's like two competitions going on and like really chaotic. I was just thinking, these guys are going to be so tired on day three. Like, they're going to be drained mentally and physically. And day three, you need to bring the heat because the last event is the toughest event, like thrusters, echo bike, bar facing burpees, like brutal event. And if you're not mentally fresh, you're just gonna, that event is gonna eat you up. And so that also kind of fed my motivation to really create those boundaries. When you're there, you're there. When you're not there, you're not there. And that's a huge thing, but it's very difficult, because it's difficult because you don't really get to live the experience. And when you're there, you kind of want to live it. But if you want to perform really well, it's like you're creating these like walls around you. You go out on the floor. It's like if you're at home alone almost. You go, you do your workout, and you leave. You leave the gym, you come back. But most people, because it's such a big event, and you know a lot of people there, you want to talk to them and say hi. Maybe there's sponsors. Maybe there's your family or your friends travel to see you, and you want to say hi to them. So it's difficult. But if you want to perform really well, like, you need to create those walls. And this is also what I'm happy now that I'm a coach, that I can help other people, because it's difficult to make those good decisions constantly. But if you have somebody else who says, go sleep, I don't want to, I will tell your family, you will see them after, but trust me, now you're not here. Now you just go, you watch friends or something, you sleep, you lay with your boots on, or like, you're not here. And I will tell you at 1:22, you're going to meet me downstairs and the warm-up starts. And I think you can do that. And that's how I felt. I arrived on the final day, final event, and I felt really fresh and strong mentally. And it was just like, if it was day one, my body was good, my mind was good. And I could sense that that the others were tired. I'm like, you know, people taking lots of selfies and doing stuff right before that event. I just thought to myself, like, you're not going to go and crush it. Because to go crush this event, you need to be focused. And it's exactly what happened. I won the final heat of that workout and was able to be there like mentally really clear, even though my body was like absolutely dying in that event. But like cognitively, it was a really clear play out. I was pacing off the other guys since the first time I've ever been in that situation. I knew that when Georges Karavas picked up the bar, I was four reps ahead. I knew Jonikoski was right behind him. I knew the guy on my left side was coming. And I knew if I just kept my splits on the bike, I was going to stay ahead, and I could wait until they picked up the bar to go. And I think that's like, I've only experienced that once in my life, but I feel that was just a great example of why it's so important that you save your cognitive ability. You need to like preserve that for those moments, and you can't waste it on social media. That's the same for social media for our athletes now. We do shared posts with them, so we always have a photographer at all the events, and we write like an update post, Yellow hosted first event, 20th place. And we invite them to be collaborator, because we understand it's important. They can't just go dark mode all the time at events, because this is where the sponsors, there's a certain expectation. If I want them to train full time, they also need to live off sponsorships. So as an organization, we do these shared posts with them. So they just need to click accept, that their girlfriend or boyfriend can click accept for them, so they can be completely like in dark mode, just focus on executing and not worry about anything else. So yeah, I would say creating boundaries is like probably the most important thing in order to perform well.
It reminds me of a story. I forget if it was Greg Everett from Catalyst's weightlifting back in the day. Mm-hmm. He was talking about competing. I believe it was at the American Open in weightlifting. And he had been coaching Thursday, Friday, Saturday, all his athletes following, emotionally being invested with it. And then he had to lift on the Sunday, and he had nothing left, right? Because emotionally, yeah, he had been so drained from the coaching, from being there and looking at people lift and looking at all the competitions. So it makes a lot of sense, essentially, like you said, to separate yourself from everything that's going on, even though it's, one could say, a shame, because you're not there to then live the experience of seeing everybody and all, but it might be the determining factor between, can you express your full potential or not in that situation.
And that outweighs hugely, like if you can leave the competition feeling super satisfied with your effort, that outweighs totally living the experience being there. Like everything in life is like, you make a choice towards something else. You also make a choice to not do something else. So if you make a choice that's important to you, you just have to be ready for it. Okay, well then your performance is also going to take a hit. And if you're happy with that, that's great. But if performance is why you're there, then every decision needs to be actively chosen to help that particular thing. And that story of Greg Everett, that's one of the biggest reasons why I also will not continue my athletic career. Because this season, I have been helping, I think, in the semifinals, three different teams, seven different individuals. That means like tons of phone calls, like maybe 12 hours of phone calls the week prior to semifinals, same before quarterfinals, judging tons of athletes, helping them prepare mentally, physically, nutrition plans, whatnot, time plans, all of these things in between heats, talking to them, debriefing with them, all of those things. And that's just not possible if you want to crush it. And the other alternative would be to stop coaching everyone. And that's also not something that I was interested in. But it is just not possible. Like, if you want to be the best, you can't be coaching Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then think you can crush it on Monday. That's you have to like shield yourself from that stuff, and if you can, you should.
So you talked about the how you performed at the semis in 2022 leading up to the games. I want to come back to those games, but what are the main things that you changed between the 2021 games and 2022 games after that first experience there?
I think my training had been, I think I'm always in the challenge of when I program of making it as scientifically pleasing and progressive as possible and making it as chaotic as possible. I think like if that's the two kind of ends of the spectrum, one is like the very science-based and one is like very CrossFit chaotic type programming. I've always been leaned a lot towards the right side. And I think for most of my career, I've been like all the way on the right side. And leading into the 2022, a lot of my flaws in the 2021 season just came down to my ability to not be very good at the mixed modal stuff. I wasn't very good at blending. I could perform good in a 5K row or in, you know, a one arm snatch or maybe max unbroken ring muscle ups or something like that. But as soon as it was mixed in a mixed setting, I just wasn't able to transfer all of these sort of capacities into this setting. So leading into the 2022, I started with a lot more sport specific stuff early in the season and kept that up instead of periodizing the year a lot, which is something I thought was the right thing in the past, which I have changed my mind on. I think I used to think of training as like there's these, and I still think of it like this, but it's a bit more blend now. So it's like there's different phases of the year, but before I was biasing the phases very heavily towards certain things, and now I basically have all of these three phases inside of every phase, but the percentage of how much each thing is biased changes. So let's say in phase one, if we take gymnastics as an example, if let's say phase one was just only strict gymnastics, and then phase two was only capacity building, and phase three was only interference. I didn't feel that I was not very good at strict in this phase. And there's also strict testers in CrossFit. So if this was right before the peak, then that wasn't very, it wasn't very good. I was very good at blending it, but then I wasn't very good at isolating it, for example. But the new model is like, I have the strict, the capacity, and the interference in all of the phases, but the percentage of how much of the training I delegate to each of the three things differs. So this one is still more biased towards strict. This one is still more biased towards capacity, and this one is still more biased towards interference, but I still have all of them. So if the percentage might go like 40, 30, 30, then it goes 30, 40, 30, and then 30, 40, 30, 30, 40. Percent difference. And the same with all the like energy system training. Like if it was more biased towards zone two only in that part of the year, well, now it looks a lot more similar throughout the year. But again, like there's still a higher percentage of like moderate domain work here, and then there's a smaller percentage of like VO2 max work, and then here's more critical power, and here there's still moderate domain, but it's just a little bit less. So I think that was definitely one of the things from a training perspective. And I could feel that I was just way more fit because of this new structure. And I could just, I also had a much better idea of how to pace the different things because a lot of the training looked a lot more like competing to some extent. Not that I was just doing like for time workouts all the time, but the structure of the training was built in a such way that I had a very good idea of how to pace 100 toes to bar in the middle of a workout, because I tried 100 different ways and I tried it. I'd build it up, you know, isolated under like low interference and high interference, complementary movements, non-complementary movements, big sets, small sets, dense, not dense. And it's the same way I train now. Well, not so much now, but the same way I coach people now with this kind of mentality. And that was definitely a big game changer. So that's helped a lot.
Talk to us now about your 2022 games. How did that go compared to the first one? It's the second time you're there. What changed in your mind?
Well, that was definitely not like a very good experience because my fiance was going to give birth like maybe during the games or right before. So after the even though semifinals was like my best year ever, and I had never felt in such good shape, and I was 1 point for finishing second. And I, even though I bombed the first event, I was just like, wow, things are working. Like I'm confident, like I can do this. And I'd also been swimming all year, which I hadn't done in the past because I wasn't doubt I could make it to the games. But this year, went going into the semifinals, I knew I was better shape than last year. Nothing is guaranteed making it to the games, but I was confident I had the ability to do so. So I didn't think it was guaranteed and I had it in my hand, but I was confident I could start like games type training prior to the semifinals, which is something I definitely had not done in the past, which also resulted in worse performances at the CrossFit Games in some of the like strongman stuff or out of the gym stuff. So initially I was pretty excited, but the last months leading up to the games with the baby coming, there was just a lot of things happening and we're not sure if I could go, because I decided that I was not going to go unless the baby had come in prior, because I was not going to miss the birth for anything. And we were getting closer and closer, and I was just mentally not really, I was just, my mind was somewhere else. I was going to be a dad, and it's the biggest thing. I always dreamed about that, and it's always been something I really wanted. And even though it was decent prep and I felt good, I was ready to go, then I didn't know that I was going right until I'd asked the CrossFit Games if I could miss the check-in in case the baby hadn't arrived, and just arrived basically on the day of competition. And they had granted me the permission to do so. I just didn't have an appeal right because of that. And I was really excited about that because the baby hadn't come and it was like Sunday. But then that Sunday, which is the day of check-in, or Saturday, I can't remember right now. But anyways, I had booked my flights already and I was not going to show up for the flight. But the baby came 5 hours before the flight. And I had not packed my bags or anything. And I have like a lot of pre-competition rituals that, not that I rely a lot on from a confidence perspective, but I like my preparations a lot. And so So the minute that I didn't have any of these preparations, and I also knew that I was leaving my family in a time where there was a big need for me, and a lot of people around me had kind of like thought it was a bad idea, me leaving. But we had decided that, you know, this is the job and the baby has arrived safe and sound and everything is okay. So, you know, you need to go do your job. And yeah, so mentally, I just wasn't there. I finished 27th, and I couldn't even believe I made the cut, because I had really performed so poorly in every event, and I had given just a terrible effort. So I was honestly really shocked that I could finish still inside of the cut line. But yeah, so that wasn't like a really good experience. I'm happy that I went and did the job, but mentally I definitely wasn't there. And again, if you're not mentally there, it doesn't matter if you're physically in a great shape. And I think we see that with a lot of athletes, you know, men physically, they might be amazing, but then mentally they're not, and vice versa. Some are not physically very prepared, but mentally they're just like ready to kill, nothing to lose. And they overperform massively. So overall, it wasn't the second year that I hoped for. And for me, success is finishing higher than I finished the year before that. I finished higher in the semifinals, higher in the Open. So I was sad to not have that next step trajectory. But it was definitely mostly because of the mental. And I don't know if I'd been mentally in a great state and ready to kill if I'd finished higher than 15th. That's hard to say, but I would love to have thought so, being in a better shape.
It just highlights the contrast between those 2 years, right? And what you were saying before, you like you said, you felt fitter in 2022, but you just couldn't execute on it because of all the external influences, the emotional aspect and the mental side. I think it really highlights the importance of being mentally present and being able to give everything that you have on that moment. Cause if you've already given it somewhere else or spent that energy elsewhere, then it's just not going to be the same.
Yeah. 100%.
Did that experience have a big impact on what impact did this experience have on your decision to end your athletic career? Cause that came, I guess, a year later. Cause that was only a couple
yeah.
months. So did you already start thinking about it then, or was that still not yet in the picture?
No. The plan was go team in 2023 to have more time to develop like weaknesses for myself, have like a bigger longer off season, really focusing on running and a lot of other things, and then use the team year to still go to the games, have a great experience, learn how to be a better leader. Also just enjoy the team stuff. So just try that out, have a new challenge, shift the focus. It was going to be the first year as a dad as well, so I didn't really know how that was going to go. I'd been very clear on like, okay, my priorities is family first and then training second and then work third. And I was not going to change anything for that. And, you know, my daughter, Emilia, she woke up at least like 8 times every night for that full year. And so, yeah, that year didn't. So I'm happy I went team that year, because if I'd gone individual, I'd definitely have zero confidence to go crush it. Because being also a coach, and you know how much sleep and all these things matters. And these were the things I was really building all of my confidence on in the past. It's like, if I can manage this for sleep and this for nutrition and this for training, this for mindset, you know, there's zero reasons why I should not be able to go out and lead the event. Like that, if you do that, there's no reason why it can't be you who win the semifinals. Just do those things and there's no reason. Like, okay. And there's an agreement with myself. So it definitely was a big change of life. Like, okay, now I sleep terrible every night. I also have a lot more work. Going team actually cost a crazy amount more work. And even though it also taught me a lot of things and I loved that year and I have zero regrets for doing it, it didn't turn out to be the physical development that I had imagined to then go into the 2024 season individually and just go pedal to the metal. Let's go. Everything or nothing. This will be the season where I'm going to crack top 10. I'm going to give it everything I have. But, you know, life changes. And even though I'm a big goal setting guy, I plan far ahead. I love to do so. I always done so. I'm also with age, I've become better at becoming less black and white, a bit more good at being in the gray zone sometimes and adjusting plans. And just the way things were heading, I just knew that halfway through the 2023 season, maybe it's time. Like, we had won the semifinals. We had like 14 athletes at the semifinals. We had a team that won the semifinals. We had three individuals qualify for the games. We had like all the other guys perform super well. And yeah, I was happy and proud, but I just didn't really feel as happy as I think I should have felt. I mean, we just crushed it. Everything went as perfect as it could, pretty much. And I just wasn't feeling a lot of fulfillment from it. And it's because I had not gone 100% on either or. I couldn't help the athletes to the best of my abilities. I couldn't help myself to the best of my abilities. And even though we won as a team, I thought maybe I could have been fitter. Maybe I could have done more reps. Maybe I could help the team more if I hadn't been sleeping bad, or if I hadn't been working so much, or and I think that's when I start thinking, all right, if this doesn't make you like very satisfied, well then it's not worth like killing yourself to like have all of these balls up in the air, getting up at 5 a.m. in the morning, sleeping, you know, undisturbed 8 times a night. And I could just feel things were getting out of control. I was drinking more and more coffee to kind of manage it all and do my best. And because I don't want to let anyone down, and I am perfectionist, and I don't accept it like less than my best, then it was just, you want to be the best dad and the best husband, and the best athlete and the best coach. And you want to make sure you're there for everyone. Then you just can't in the end. And so I just knew I'm not going to do this anymore. Like, so either I'm going to basically let go of all my top clients and just focus on just generic programming and just only coach myself and just have that as priority and work less and, you know, kind of just be okay with the company stagnating and not growing any further and not developing it anymore. And yeah, I just wasn't willing to. And I've never been very good at asking for help, and it's a huge weakness, but it's just how I am. Like, so I was going to need to ask people like maybe Natalie to take all the night shifts or somebody to help me with a lot of other things. And I always been a helper, not somebody who's the center of attention. And in the past it was easy because we live out in the countryside by ourselves, and I could just train in the dark by myself, and I had nobody to be accountable for other than Natalie, but she was in the process with me. And so like everybody around me understood he's just in a tunnel going for this goal. But you know, you become a dad for me at least, and I don't want to be my number one priority. And when my child comes home from, you know, daycare, then I'm gonna hang around her and play with her until she goes to bed around 6:30. And if I only have, you know, the morning with her and 3.5 hours in the afternoon, I don't want to be training in that time. At the same time, I'm not going to be training at 8 p.m. at night until 10 p.m. It's also terrible for recovery and sleep. So yeah, there was like 1,000 things coming together at that moment. The decision to go team though was made in December 2021, 22. No, 21. It was made like almost 1 year. It was made like way before the 2022 season.
Okay,
yeah. Where I went individual, because I was asked by Annie's team to be on their team as one of their males. And that's when the thought started kicking in. I was like, hey, maybe I could make a team. I'm coaching some pretty great athletes. Like, and you know, the team is only as good as the weakest link. So like, I don't need to have like a Matt Fraser in my team, because if the next person would be me, then I would be the one slowing the team down. Hey, I think we could build a team. Maybe that'd be a cool challenge. Maybe that would be, and so that's kind of like how that process started. And I started putting together like, okay, how much would No Shortcuts finance? How would the structure look like? What would the logistics look like? How could we set up the teams? So all that was done in January of the 2022 season. Mm-hmm. And the team came together only like 12 months later, but the whole process had been set up a long time in advance. So that was not like decided as a retirement plan. That was just, all right, new challenge, a good opportunity to work on other things and then come back individually for the 2024 season.
With your experience going through all of this, and especially going team after going individual to, like you said, work on your weaknesses, maybe have more time for different things, do you see that? And obviously, like you said, the environment just wasn't the one you would have needed for all of this to pan out on all fronts, and led to your decision to call it quits on your athletic career. Do you still see individuals going team for a year or two as a good idea for people that would like long-term to be their best self as an individual competitor? Do you think going the team route is a good idea still?
Not for somebody who's already made it to the games individually. So if it was someone who was on their way up, And it would be good to get an experience like that under their belt. Yes, maybe. But as no, like if you had been to the games individually before, I wouldn't think that would be a good plan. Because if you want to crush it on a team, like it requires a lot of training with the team. It requires a lot of teamwork, and working on the worm is not going to help your individual weaknesses. It can there is other benefits, like it creates a great training environment around you. So it really depends on the person. Hey, now you have training partners that can train with you a lot. Like with my team, they lived here twice a week. So 2 full days a week, they were living here. And one of the athletes were living here like all full time. So we were seeing each other like 2 to 3 full days, so out of 5 training days every week. And so it was also a lot of fun, and it was a lot of good times. And that definitely unlocks a different potential. But when all the barbell cycling is synchro work, and you know, you change a ring muscle up style to fit another person, or you change a toes to bar style to fit another person, like those things are not going to help your individual career. And you know, we ran with a rope every time. Like you run, you see what I'm saying? Like it's not, you don't really get to really work on your individual weaknesses in that sense if you want to crush it on the team. Now, if you go team, because whatever, I mean, you could set up a pretty good team 1 month out of the semifinals. That I know now. Like if everybody's willing to go all in and like live here for a month prior, like we can put it all together in 1 month. If the athletes are like high level enough, but I wouldn't say it's like a great plan. If you really want to crush it individually long term, it'd probably be better just to take a year off, not competing too much, and just focusing on the training, like be in some training camps, maybe go to 1-2 events and like that, experience it. But I also, you know, I'm also. A lot of people talk about going to a lot of competitions to gain experience. And I've always thought that that wasn't really something. Experience, I think it's a terminology that gets thrown around, but I don't really know. You only learn, like if you come in with a straight up plan, you can learn from that experience. You can learn, all right, the warm up was too long, or the caffeine shot was taken too far out or too close, or this strategy didn't work, and you could go home and work on it. It was great. So from that, you can learn from that experience. But if you rock up to a competition, that's a team of two competition with your buddy with no plan, you have a good time that weekend, that experience teaches you nothing. That's like, that ruins training. It's if you want to go really far. So there's two different things, like these people that want to crush it and these people want to have fun. So I'm talking about these people that really want it. Team of two competitions, that kind of stuff. If you want to crush it individually, then focus on the individual. And you can only learn something from the experience if you're coming in with a very detailed plan. If not, that experience teaches you nothing. But it also, there's like two subcategories of that. There's the athletes that come in with they have a sports background. So they have been competing as a child in whatever, soccer or American football or tennis or... So they don't need to learn to compete. They know how to compete. They just need to be fit enough and come in with the right plans. And so that's also why I hadn't done a lot of competitions, because I never felt, never one did that past event didn't teach me anything other than like from the particular stuff of the planning. It wasn't the need to learn how to be against other people, especially not in CrossFit, because if you come from like contact sports, there you're learning how to navigate based on somebody else. Okay, you're getting hit by a guy, or he serves like this, and you're gonna receive it like this. Competing a lot in those types of sports makes a lot of sense. But I feel like in our sport, you're just in your lane. The only time you get to be next to someone is if you're in a run, for example. There could be like a good experience. All right, when I'm gonna jump out in the water and I'm getting kicked in my face and my goggles are falling off, next time I will be better prepared for it. That will not throw me off. But for 99% of the other events, I mean, I was just kind of imagining in my own little bubble. My strategy is so planned out that it doesn't matter if there's 10 other guys or 20 other guys next to me, because that their strategies will not affect me, and I can't affect their strategy unless they get distracted by mine or focus on mine. But so at the same time, I never think that people should compete all the time, unless they come in with a great plan to that they can then learn from. But if they don't, then it's just taking time away from training.
Do you think that there's a significant number of athletes that want to break through, get to the games, that would benefit from taking a year off of major competitions, or just kind of really focusing on themselves and their weaknesses without thinking about the execution part? Do you think that's maybe a limiter for a number of people?
Oh yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So what do you think is limiting them in their ability to make that decision to say, okay, I know this is the right decision. I know that, yes, I'm going to be away. Yes, I'm going to, you know, fear of missing out and all those things, and people might point fingers and whatnot. But how do you, what's missing? Why is it not happening more?
I don't think that maybe these people, I mean, from my point of view, when I start working with a new client and we have a conversation about the goals, this is always the first conversation. Okay, what would you like and how you plan to get there? And now let's talk about how we're going to get there. And then if they're like, yeah, I would like to do this event and this, and then I have this team competition, I'm like, is this competition helping you get to the goal? And they always know the answer. It's like, no. Okay, well, maybe we could either prioritize an individual competition or no competition at all. Because the way I look at it is that if you want to win, it's not done testing events at competition. It's done in the gym by yourself, working hard or with training partners or whatever you want to say, but it's done in the training. And with training, we can simulate many things. Like, so if it came down to testing, I mean, we could just pick an event from Dubai and then say, all right, you're going to hit this on Saturday, the last training day of your week. You're going to test this event. You're going to line it up exactly like they do it on the floor. Okay, and then we say 3, 2, 1, go. We see where you're at currently. That's testing. Then we know. Then, okay, good, bad, it doesn't matter. We learn and we start back on Monday. The problem is with competitions, you deload 1 week prior. Maybe if like in a case like Dubai, they release the events 1 month before almost, you're going to be testing the events for 4 weeks. You're now looking at 5, 6 weeks of training that is not going to be garbage, but they're not going to be as good as they could be. And at this point of time, it's so difficult to make it to the CrossFit Games because the field is extremely dense, which means that if somebody has 6 weeks of training on you, that might just be enough for them to go in and do what it takes. And so I think like having a good coach or honest conversations with your spouse, whoever is guiding you in training, it's like, do we think this is, I just don't think people think about it. Like with a lot of other things, like, is this going to help me go there? And they only start maybe thinking about if when they're close to the event. Okay, semifinals coming up, I'm really going to dial in my nutrition. Like my deal with the four athletes that I work with is, you know, my goal is that we shake hands in May next year and say, all right, no matter what happens, we know we have done everything. That's why every month we're checking in, like, are you following the nutrition plan? Are you sleeping the hours we've agreed on? Are you doing the habits we've agreed on outside of training? You're clicking in your training. I'm watching that. The data, is the data looking like it's progressing? Are you feeling healthy? And if we can every month for the whole year shake hands on like, all right, I made them aware about it. I'm aware about it. We're both happy with the biggest things that affect training and adaptation to get better. Then we know by May next year when we meet up and it's game time and like we can be calm. We know that they're ready, and I can also feed the conversation that you see that guy over there, he's been at 3-4 events this off season. And even though he's been clicking in first places and he's happy and he's won some cash, he's nervous now because he knows that you've been in the dark working by yourself. You've been on training camps, testing yourself against the others, which is exactly as good as competition. We can also set up simulation against other athletes of their level. We don't need to do all these travels. I mean, all my top athletes still go to like 2 off-season events. So it's not that they're just, you know, lock the door and stay outside of reach. But they're strategically picked out these events, and there are not going to be any events that are not going to help them, because every event we then go to in the off season, we are trying out protocols or particular things that we can use for semifinals and for the CrossFit Games. So they're more like testers in that sense, and they're not to, yeah, they're always to try to win, but it's not, this is not the main things. And I think it's just important knowing what you really want, not what you want right now, but what you really want. And I think a lot of people struggle to have that conversation. It's like, oh, I really want to do this. Well, then you shouldn't do what feels right now. And doing those five off-season events, they're just, you know, there's a reason why nobody who is at the top is doing that. You know, like, it's like, we always do this exercise where you kind of have to build like the 2.0 version of yourself. Okay, you tell me what your goal is, and then we talk about like your outcome-based goal and the action-based goal, and we set up these KPIs and KBIs to get there. Then and then we kind of go into, all right, the person that can click in this goal, tell me about that person. What do they do? How do they live? How do they train? What are the characteristics? We're just building this imaginary figure. And then we can just go, you've just built this person. And we can both agree that that person is not going to do five buddy events in the off season, because that's not one of the characteristics that made them, made it possible to click in that big goal. And so I think just sometimes you just have to make these sort of like exercises or imaginary drills for them to realize what it is they really want and how they're really going to get there. And I think it's just a question of just not reflecting upon it. And I don't blame them, because it requires somebody like a coach who says, hey, you know, I think you should maybe prioritize this. Because I think coaches are generally speaking like afraid of making decisions on behalf of the athlete or pushing them into a certain decision, and letting the athlete ought to regulate a lot in terms of not just only training, but also decision making. And I think the way I am at least, and how I wish I was coached and how I coach now is sort of like, it's very, I wouldn't get direct, but it's like, I will tell you what I think it takes. And, you know, you either see it that way or you don't see it that way. And if you see it that way, cool, we're on the same page, and we're probably gonna succeed. And if you don't see it that way, that's okay. Then I'm just probably not the right fit for you. Because if I'm going to stand in the warm-up area at the semifinals, and, you know, we're about to go into the finale event, and I'm going to tell you, you're ready and you got this, I have to mean it. And if I don't believe that, if I think you've done 10 off-season events, I would never think that could work to cash in that goal. So I couldn't tell you that. Do you see my point?
100%. And I think there's two things that spring to mind that are obviously linked. It's the accepting that it's not going to happen right now. It's that delayed gratification versus instant gratification. Yeah. And in a world of instant gratification where everything is right now, it's getting harder and harder to see far into the future. And then I guess what's linked to that is also trusting the process. And I, what I see, at least, and I'd be interested to have your perspective on that, although you've probably responded at least half of that already, is a lot of people do all those competitions because they're unsure about how fit they are. So they think they have to test themselves constantly to make sure, oh, am I better? Am I better now? Am I better now? Am I better now? But really, like you said, if you want to make drastic change in your fitness, it's not going to happen from one competition to 3 weeks later in the next competition, because the execution, like you said, might be something to work on, but we have to dissociate, okay, do I need to execute better, or do I need to, you know, train better and develop qualities that are going to take 3 months, 6 months, 9 months to actually show? Because you can't, yes, some things you get, especially at the beginning, you can make a big difference in a short amount of time, but the higher level you get to, the longer it takes to actually make a meaningful difference. And so you need that patience and that trust in the process and say, okay, it's going to take me 6 months before I can show something for what I'm working on. But you have to trust in it. If you don't, then it's harder to do it.
100%. And I think that's the worst thing about going to events, is to, like you said, if I do poor in an event, it should be because, oh, hey, I'm not strong enough. And I should then go back to the drawing board and try to get stronger. It shouldn't be, oh, I bombed this event strategically. If you're bombing the event strategically, it's telling me that either you came in with no plan or your training is not teaching you how to make a plan in the first place. And then it doesn't, then it's stupid to go to the next event and just make the same mistakes. And the same again, it's also stupid to go to the next event if you, if strength was a limiter and then you go again, strength is a limiter again, of course. Like it takes tons of time to develop those qualities. And every competition you go to is now depriving you of like several weeks of training to get stronger in that thing that you were not so good at. And it's sort of like a race against the clock the whole year. Like the year goes by so fast and everybody's getting better. And so if you were already not very good at something and the other guys and girls are getting better at it, you know, you need to spend even more time to work on it in order to catch them. Because it's like, it's a catch race. If you finished 27 at the semifinals last year, you're here and then somebody's number one and you want to catch that person. That person is going to continue getting better, supposedly. That's why they've already gotten to this point. And to make sure your curve is better than theirs, you need to make even more good decisions. And that could be not going to 10 off-season events. Maybe you're winning the CrossFit Games every year. Maybe you could do a few more off-season events because, you know, you are just that much better. And at this point, it's like fine-tuning tiny things. But for most of us, it's big changes that need to be made, and it's big jumps, and they need to be done in the training. And I think it's a lot about having a coach you can talk to about this. And even if you're a generic program like with us, you can always reach out and ask, hey, what do you think about, should I do this competition? And I can tell them where we are in the season and what we're working on, and if I think that would be a good way to test it. Like, hey, I need to go test my fitness. I could also just send you some approximate scores that I think you should be hitting in this workout. And then I can tell you how far you're off. Or even better, just, you know, go in the quarterfinals last year and pull out one of the events and test it. Like, that would be the best performance indicator instead of going to an event where the field could vary tons. You could win an event in a weak field and think you're great at strength. And then you show up at the quarterfinals next year, and then a bad snatch is 120, but at that event it was the first place. So that's why like testers would be much better to just pick out events from quarterfinals, semifinals, where hundreds of athletes have done it, and you can really see, okay, this is legit a hole, and not, and I don't, it can't learn anything from that with a small field of 20 athletes at a local competition. But I think the confidence just comes down to, like, if the program is very clear, it should make you confident, because it would give you the results. You would see the bottom level is getting higher. You're capable of doing more and more, even without a coach telling you. And the second layer to that is, like, if you're ever in doubt, ask your coach. Like, I can, when I have the calls with my individual clients, you know, I could tell them, hey, that's not good enough. Based on what I know, like, we need more from you here, and we can restructure the training in order to get more from you. But I'm telling you right now, this needs to be better. And the vice versa, hey, this is going really well. Like, where you're at right now, you're dangerous in this piece. So you can be confident in that. And yeah, so it's like kind of two layers. The training should teach, should show it to you, prove it to yourself. And the coach could be there to kind of confirm, hey, you're ready. And that's also what I always loved or wish I had in the past. It's like some coach could tell me before semifinals, Andre, I guarantee you, you're ready. Because now the only way I could, you know, shut out all the insecurities and doubts in my head would just be to pull up my training log and just go through all the phases I've done the whole year and go, okay, like I've hit 97% of all the sessions. I've done this. I've checked the boxes every week. I've actually improved that much in those things. I'm better. Like, it's there black and white. I should be confident I can do this. Good. But it's obviously easier when you have a coach that can just kind of fast track that process and just say, you're good. Let's go.
Sometimes it's easier to just be told than have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
Where, as a little side question, where do you stand on this issue of events being published ahead of time or not. I've heard secondhand accounts from guys like Max Alhaj at Training Think Tank of some athletes that are in the know many weeks before others on what events are going to come out. There's always that, I guess, that fine line between the unknown and unknowable motto of CrossFit and the reality of competition and of logistics. Where do you see the sport going, or where would you like to see the sport going in that regard in the coming years in order to make it a fair playing field and that everybody gets access to the right information at the same time so that everybody can prepare ahead of time if they need to, or for it to not be prepared at all? But again, on the scale of the CrossFit Games, it becomes almost impossible for nobody to know until the last second what's going to happen.
Yeah. I, first of all, didn't believe, and I don't know if that was naive, that that was actually true, that people knew the events in advance, until I joined the athletic committee on CrossFit and was representing on the individual side from the Europe. They have like different representative, and I'm not anymore, but there they brought up this thing of like, there was some other athletes in this call, and they knew for a fact, like the full weekend of the CrossFit Games, like Saturday, Sunday, the whole programming, months, like a month out. That's also why you see, you know, when they come out with crossover double unders, and all of a sudden, some guys, they just pull out a beaded rope out of their back, and you just go, how can you have that rope? Like, I've never seen that rope in my life. And you have it. Like, what a coincidence. And I think, you know, that's definitely an issue, because huge advantage. If you stood to me, all events should just be released like 48 hours out. 48 hours is enough to let the athletes, like if there's anything that's like super unclear, like freestanding, handstand push-up into whatever, something like, okay, I'm not too sure about this exercise. Like what, maybe just have a day to just kind of look it up or figure it out, or crossover double unders, okay, you have time enough to get that specific rope that's required in order to do that exercise, or those kind of things. So I think just all events should be secret until just 48 hours out. But of course, it's difficult when they pick games athletes that are part of different training camps, and I'm sure they sign maybe a waiver where they're not allowed to speak about the events. But I don't know how, you know, to really, then it's a trust thing, and I'm not really sure how they could solve that. They would need to get some like athletes that are very high level that could test the events, that doesn't know anyone, or that works for HQ. I'm not sure what they could do about that. You know, I just hope that people would be honest about it. And this is the same problem in small events. Like all the times I hear, oh yeah, do you know like strength and depth 2020, I remember my coach telling me, Andre, like, we could probably figure out all the events if you want. I'm like, what? No. Like, then if I do well, then all I'm going to be thinking about is because I knew the events. That would be like the worst. And he's like, yeah, but I have to tell you, the other guys, they will know. I'm like, okay, I still don't want to know. But that is so frustrating. But again, like, you know, this comes down to just the organization being more professional or more strict with it. I don't know what they can do to rule it better. I think it just comes down to like just hiring trustworthy people that, you know, you can count on, and that will take some time, and you have to just, I think you just have hard consequences if it gets found out. But yeah, but again, I feel like this is one of those things that I don't really care about, because it's just a waste of energy. There's tons of those things. And I hate actually discussing or talking about all of these, like what if, or what CrossFit should do. Like, we sign up for the CrossFit Open, and the minute we do so, we have decided that we want to play the game, and it's their game. If you're not happy, make your own CrossFit Games then. And then, you know, instead of like everyone hosting tons of like conversations about what all the things they do bad. And in reality, most people have no understanding of what it takes to put out an event like this, what it costs, the organization for it, like, and so it's just easy to criticize. And so we just always talk about, like, with the guys I work with, and just, we don't care. Like, we don't care what the events are. We don't care about what the structure is and how the season changes. And it's just waste of energy. Like, we're just going to focus on training, and there's so many things to focus on already. So, you know, making sure you take all your supplements daily, you get your sleep, and you have good habits, and you dial in with training, you send your videos to your coach, and you fill in feedback. I mean, if you do all of those things right, it's not going to be much time left to, you know, worry about if you think crossover double unders are stupid or not. Who cares?
So, like, yeah, I fully hear your point, and I think I fully agree with you on the athlete side, given that they have so much to focus on. And like you said, once you sign up, you agree to play the game. So who, in your opinion, if anybody, should be asking those questions, having those conversations, if not, like you said, if not the athletes, because they have a job to do, and the coaches, I guess, are one step removed, but they're still in that same quote unquote game. We want CrossFit to, you know, be the best sport it can be. We want it to be professional. We want it, the image, obviously, that goes with it, to be positive, because it does reflect directly and indirectly on the athletes that compete in that sport. So who do you think is best placed to have those conversations and essentially try to improve the sport? Because I think it's, like you said, it's always easy to criticize and point the finger. And at the end of the day, if we want things to move forward, we need constructive criticism and ideas and ways of making it better. Who should be in charge of this? How can that be done better, in your opinion?
So CrossFit has an athlete committee now where they have different representatives for the different categories from different continents. And I think the first step would be to get to those people and have those, so bring your concerns to those people and have them bring. So I used to be on a call with CrossFit every month where we could bring concerns to them and talk about these things we want to see change that are not good enough. And they were taking it. Like, it was high people in CrossFit listening to these things and trying to make adaptations. And the same with PFFA, with the Brent Fikowski and Pat Vellner leads. And this is another type of organization you can bring something to, and they have direct contact and communication with CrossFit and are getting things changed. So going to them and making them, because, and this is my opinion, but, and again, it's not whether it's right or wrong, but a lot of people hosting podcast shows talking about, like, all the things that they think suck, you know, it's great, but I don't think CrossFit has time to, you know, listen to all these podcasts and sit and take notes. If those podcast shows rather instead had just sent those notes and what they think is the solution straight up to CrossFit, then we would probably move in the better direction rather than just making tons of negative media about a sport that you're living off. I mean, you sense what I think. It's important to be critical and always think, what can we do better? But there's just ways of doing it. And I think the most productive ways is that now CrossFit have set up this thing that has representatives. So maybe what they should be better at is, like, okay, we have, he's a representative. You can contact Andre with your issues. Andre will bring it straight to us in a formal, great conversation, or PFFA or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. And then we can take actionable things on it. But because I think it's like people are walking around talking about behind your back. I mean, the best, you just kind of, like, you just ignore it, because it's not really, if they really had a problem with you and they want a solution, they'll just come to you. And then you could sit down with them and have a good conversation. I feel it's the same thing here.
Yeah.
Oh, we're mad about the season changes every year, but nobody's thinking, why is it changing? I mean, it's because it's not running well. So they're trying to make better changes. And the same now with the top 25% that everybody's criticizing and saying it's about the money. Well, if they're not making money, they're not hosting the CrossFit Games anymore. And is that a better scenario? No. Like, of course, like, we don't understand their business, and it's easy to sit at home and make math. Okay, 13,000 affiliates times 4,500 euros, and then think, oh, they have tons of money. But we don't understand their organization, and I'm sure they're not swimming in money and having champagne showers and whatnot, you know, like, so I just think, you know, for me, it's just, you know, talk to a representative. CrossFit wants the best for us and for the sport. And I'm sure that this is also what everyone on those podcasts wants to do. And that's why people are very vocal about it. I think it's great. But I just think, you know, the best way to go about it is just, I mean, there is a direct contact to CrossFit through their email. Just yeah. Send, hey, I think this is an issue. Could you bring it up? And I'm sure you get answered within 24 hours.
Yeah, use the system that's in place. It's, I mean, the parallel with, I guess, the democratic process or any political process is the same, right? You could complain to your neighbor that stuff's not going the way you want, or you can go talk to your local representative, and their job is then to relay that information and act on it. So I like that advice that you put out, and I think it's a very important one. It also makes you more of an actor, right? Rather than just a bystander and criticizer of what's going on, because now you're taking action towards I guess solutions instead of just pointing out the downfalls and not doing anything about it on that front. So I think
that's what's so great about the PFA organization, yeah. Like the professional athlete committee. This is all voluntarily work.
Mm-hmm.
It's CrossFit at its spirit. You know, it's people trying to make the sport better with no other, you know, interest than their genuine reasoning behind it and just wanting to make it better. Mm-hmm. And I think I would also assume that's how CrossFit looks at it and how they're operating. They want to make the best. They're not purposely trying to change the season to make it a nightmare for nobody. They're not doing anything to make it worse for anyone. I mean, in the first place, the sport is built on, you know, on very good values. And so I think it's always important to just remember those things first. If things are changing, it's most likely not because anybody's trying to hurt anyone or making it worse. It's because they're trying to make it better, and it's changing because something isn't working as good as it can be.
Yeah, absolutely. As my small contribution to this part of the conversation, the link to the PFAA is in the description of the podcast. So anybody who has complaints, go talk to your local representative and get things going on that front. Andre, I wanted to finish by highlighting all the great work you're doing with No Shortcuts. We were talking off air just before we started recording about all the developments that are going on. For those who, you know, have been following you for many years that are maybe following your program now or considering it, talk to us as far as you can, obviously, about the behind the scenes, everything that you're putting in place to make this programming, to make this company run as best as it can and help as many people as possible.
Yeah, so in the past 4 months, we made a lot of changes in order to make a more healthy and better organization that can bring the company more forward and help more people and develop better products and better services. So that, because our goal is to make the absolute best training program for CrossFitters at all levels and all scales. And so we have now hired a like back office team that takes care of all the budgeting and salaries and, you know, website development, generally speaking, all like IT stuff that I was sort of trying to manage before and was just not passionate about, not good at, and had no clue about, to be honest. And we have like an art director that takes care of all the visual stuff. We're like also recently hired him and are doubling his hours coming soon. And then we have Natalie, my fiance, who's also the co-founder of the company. She takes care of like athlete care. So she does all communication, answers messages. That was also all me that was trying to manage that before, which was just not really, really good. So, you know, my focus is the product. It's the product development. It's the coaching, the programming. And that's a huge job. And it's what I love the most. And so it's nice now that we've built a team that allows me to focus on that purely. And so we also have a coaching team with two other coaches that also work out here. So we have an office, that's where I'm sitting right now, where we have the team working between 1 and 3 days a week. So we have the media and the back office team here once or twice a week. And then we have the coaches here once a week. And then we have myself and Natalie here on a daily basis. And so it's the main mission for us is to build a good team and re-inject everything we make. So we just put in, we get paid what we need to in order to get by, and the rest goes straight back into the company, trying to to have more time to learn, to develop, to hopefully host more training camps, do more stuff for the community, and just in generally speaking, just make the products better. Because making a good product is just a massive challenge in CrossFit because of the many modalities, you know, understanding endurance and strength and weightlifting and gymnastics, understanding how to put it together, understanding psychological part of it. And so a lot of time now is really exciting that I get to just work on that. I have several days a week where I have allocated time to learn, to write things down, to study, to better the services, better the protocols. And so that's kind of what's going behind the scenes. Like, for us, number one is the product, and the other number one is the team that is behind the product and making sure that everyone is doing good and is developing inside of the team. And so we don't have a lot of like expansion plans in terms of like making events or like competitions or building many gyms or anything like that. Our main focus right now is making sure the program, the coaching is top tier and the people behind it is happy and constantly developing.
Well, I'm sure you're going to put all the energy that you have. You're already putting all the energy that you have into it, just like you have done with your athletic career until recently. Andre, it's been a lot of fun having you back on the podcast. I hope we can have another one before 2.5 years from now.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks a lot for having me. And also, I've also been buying your programs and your services, and I'm excited for you to help No Shortcuts and some of the athletes that I work with a bit more specifically with the Brief Way Better and some other cool tools. So thanks a lot for everything you're putting out. I've definitely learned a lot from it and will continue to learn a lot from it. So I'm excited to constantly just dive more into the stuff that you do. And because, like I said, it's like once you go down the rabbit hole, you realize that it's almost never ending.
It is. It's a life's work, I guess, when you get to it.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Andre, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you want to support the show, here's two great options for you to do so. The first one is to leave us a 5-star review on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify. The second one is to share this episode on your social media or simply send it directly to a friend. Thank you so much for your support, and I will see you in the next episode.